Welcome to another episode of the Catbird Speaks, the official podcast of the Catbird Seat, the White Sox blog on the ESPN Sweet Spot Network. You can listen to this podcast on iTunes by searching the Catbird Seat, or you can find our Podbean site if you're really oddly motivated, or you can find it on our blog, download the file as an MP3, what have you. I'm getting this information out of the way because I'm not going to remember it later. Joining us today for another update on the White Sox, Nick Schaefer in Manhattan.
Good evening, everybody.
Ethan Spaulding in Glenview.
Yeah, Glenview.
Nailed it! And me here in Elkhart. So the White Sox just played a really bad series of baseball. This is like kind of our template intro to any podcast. But coming out of the break, they had had a good start to the month of July and then played a really good Royals team and, you know, looked pretty bad. And for some reason, because they had started July 9-3 or 8-3, I guess, against some, you know, decent competition, there was some sense that if they could keep it going through the deadline, maybe that
would change. While scoring like 2.3 runs a game still.
Yeah, they've their shutout, going into their shutout, they were scoring like barely over 3 runs a game, and then, you know, that took them under 3 runs a game for the month, which is still their best month of the season,
record-wise. I did not watch a single game this weekend because I was at Pitchfork.
There wasn't a lot of scoring.
No, Chris Sale was bad, and I'm just sad. At least I saw some good music.
Chris Sale was like, I mean, we saw Chris Sale bad in April, like, we just didn't have things working. This is just like not a great start. It wasn't like he was unplayable or awful or something was like noticeably wrong. He just like wasn't in the middle of his insane stretch anymore.
Yeah. Well, if they pull him after 6, he goes what, 6 innings with 2 runs or whatever?
Yeah.
Like I know that's you know, not the only way of looking at it, but really if that was, you know, if a good manager would identify that that's when he should be pulled, then we're just talking about, oh, well, this wasn't one of his godly starts. Then again, he's got what's been a pretty bad defense all year, and he's going against a team that puts the ball in play above all else. So,
yeah, you know, the defense did not do him any favors yesterday. They kind of more made his early innings more difficult than they should be, than they were responsible for the 7th. Sale, they kind of also needed him to eat a ton of innings because Saturday was a disaster for the bullpen. And Matt Albers kind of had to save the day on Sunday by.
Yo, I didn't watch Saturday. Why did Dan Jennings throw 3 2/3 innings with Robertson in the pen? Like, is there any reason for that?
And Rodon on his throw day and not pitching again until Tuesday and not having pitched for a week.
Like, why is Dan Jennings a 3 2/3 inning pitcher? That's like Hector Noese level.
Yeah, no. The reasons Robin gave for it were not very good. I mean, he kind of made it sound like, oh, I was just trying to get through one more inning than Robertson, but like, at which what run expectancy does Jennings, like, in his 4th inning of work and 2nd time through the order facing Lorenzo Cain throwing Robinson like a career high number of pitches in a like give up a run and you lose situation does Robertson become necessary?
He's like, most MLB managers are bad tactically compared to like what would be an ideal manager. Robin Ventura is bad for a major league manager, and he's not like good at anything else. Like, it's not like this team is a bunch of wildly overperforming players, and like to the contrary, basically every single one of their players is underperforming this year. And I don't really think of one player who's like really overperformed under Robin, other than Jose Abreu last year, and maybe Connor. Bye, Connor.
Well, I've been kind of pushing this for a while, and I think that this analysis doesn't get done often enough because you're talking about there's only 30 of these jobs. You know, this is sort of the most, if you want to be a manager, these are the 30 most desirable positions in the world, right? And I've thought about this for GMs in in pro sports, and when you keep piling up all of the things that have gone wrong and things that they've done badly, the burden, I think, shifts, and it no longer becomes come up with this overwhelming case why this person should be fired, instead of it being listen, someone else can almost certainly do better. And why, if there is someone who can do better, why are we, shouldn't we be going after them? If we can improve something and it's not, you know, a super expensive area of the team to do. I mean, the manager is hardly the most expensive part of the team to improve. I mean, if you can, why not? And I think in a case like Ventura, where there was no hiring process and he had no experience at all, I don't see how, I think that even that burden becomes even more on the person who's arguing for him keeping his job. Like, I don't know what the argument.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, the only thing left for him is, he's always seemed like a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy.
I think a lot of the argument is basically like, well, what's the margin? Like, how much is it going to help you? But it just, like, I don't care if it's not going to help you much. It's not. That managers don't help that much, but he's very clearly a negative, and at a position that is pretty much the most expendable position in all of baseball. It's so easy to change managers. It's not easy to change your $40 million first baseman or whatever. Like, you can't pull out John Danks when he's making $15 million a year. I mean, you can, and maybe they should, but that's a different conversation. As opposed to Robin, who is, what, under contract for another year for a couple million a year? Like, you're not eating a ton of money to get rid of him.
Well, there's such an intense bidding war for him.
And the other, and you're right. And even a guy like John Danks, where for the last 3 years he's been bad, there are real baseball reasons to keep him in the rotation. They don't involve competing this year, but they involve protecting
the
workloads of commodities that will be valuable to you in more relevant seasons in the future. You know, I could argue, well, hey, if you were really serious about competing this year, you would have yanked him the first chance you got. But their offense and position players were so terrible that it was just kind of a moot point. And he was still better than Noezi, so he wasn't even the worst guy in the rotation to start with. So, you know, I can think of reasons why Dank should keep his job. I can't think of reasons why Ventura should. And especially when in – okay, so 2012, I think he managed them out of a division win. I think that he screwed up enough games with the margin.
I wouldn't put the blame fully on him, but I think he definitely was a negative, especially down the stretch.
Right, okay. No, he's not the sole reason. I never thought that they deserved to win, but they were in a position to, and I think he managed his way out of a lot of really close games against important, you know, against the Tigers specifically.
The gunshot to the chest that was like their inability to hit down the stretch probably killed them, but Ventura stabbing them in the neck probably didn't help.
They've been so bad at hitting for for the end of 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. It's been so miserable. Not that I'm saying anything profound there. Like, everyone knows that.
2012 was a decent offense.
No, I mean down the stretch. Since the stretch end of 2012 through now, everything's been so miserable.
Well, even that was a team that just like didn't convert opportunities. Now we have a team that like doesn't create opportunities, and then we have our announcers talk about like they really need to be better at running into the scoring position. It's like they just need more than like two instances per game.
They also don't hit for any power. But so the thing with 2012 with Ventura, sorry, just before you change the subject, because I know that it's tedious and there isn't really much left for me to say about it. But 2012 was okay. He's never been a manager before. Bracketing that, by the way, that's stupid that we're in that position at all. But okay, maybe he'll learn on the job, right, as he goes. But then in 2013, when it's a rebuilding is thrust upon them, he shreds the two best, you know, Addison Reed, whatever's become of him aside, he shreds the two best arms in your bullpen who are both like 25 or younger in a 99 loss season. And like, forget everything else. That's so absurdly short-sighted that it's just like, you know, if I hear that my neighbor like wrapped his car around a telephone pole because he was driving with a BAC of like 30, I don't care if he's like the best real estate guy in town. I don't trust his judgment on anything. I'm not asking his opinion on anything. So a guy who thinks pitching Addison Reed six games in a row when you're on pace to win 60 something games, like, wait, you're in charge of a team? We want you making these decisions? That's insane.
He cited the example I wanted cited, so that's all. Yeah, I guess the irritating thing about Saturday was it's his fourth year, and what basically came to pieces is that he didn't have a plan. He used all of his bullpen in like the seventh or eighth innings, which is good, which is fine because he's being aggressive and, you know, you can lose the game then. You don't manage for the 12th inning while you're in the eighth. But then he came to this point where he's in the 11th inning and he's managing for innings beyond the 11th. And like, I can't use Robertson because what if I run out and not.
And then, and then you're sitting there saying, you know, like you said at the beginning of this podcast, well, he probably erred on the side of leaving Sale in longer on Sunday because the bullpen was so taxed from Saturday. And they had an off day Monday. Robertson could have pitched just to like stay loose, even in a losing effort on Sunday.
They had an off day Monday and they had Rodon, who had not pitched since before the All-Star break.
And if we're saying, geez, okay, the season's probably dead after having lost two or three coming out of the All-Star break, even though it's probably already dead anyway. And is the guy who's really going to be picking up the slack for the rotation, should it really be Chris Sale? Like, why don't you just, I mean, send Putnam out there again. Who cares? Send out, like, everybody else on the team is less valuable. Why are we having Chris Sale, like, try to max himself out in a losing effort?
Which is then makes Jennings more, like, irritating, because, like, if they're really trying to just, like, push as hard as they can until, you know, the end, like, the trade deadline where they have to, like, admit that they're sellers, you can't give, like, three high-leverage innings to freaking Dan Jennings in his, like, second or third appearance back from the DL with a 7 ERA.
That's the thing. There's no consistent logic to what Ventura is doing. He's clearly just flailing about for whatever seems like the most defensible choice at the time. Like, there's no plan. It's just sort of this slow gear turning, like, clumsy reactive thought to think, you know, because early in the season there was a bang bang play at second base in a game where the White Sox were trying to come back in the ninth inning, and I think it was the second out of the ninth inning, and it was the difference between if he had won the challenge, they have a runner on second down like one run with one out, and instead by not challenging it's just 100% guaranteed it's two outs with nobody on. And he just didn't challenge. And it's just one of those things where how low of a percentage would it have to be of succeeding before it's not worth it? Like 0.001%? Like, yeah, you just from a game theory perspective, you throw the challenge out there if you have any chance of it succeeding, because the impact it has on your ability to win the game is so gigantic and there's no downside. But the fact that doesn't occur to him. He doesn't have that sort of capacity for, I don't know, maximizing chances of winning. It just,
hey man, he took a psychological profile prior to getting the job that put him on par with 4-star generals. Remember that? Obviously. Oh,
clearly, yeah. And that's why they whenever they go to Minnesota, they play like they have PTSD, and it's I don't know, it's horrible.
I think that's gone with the Metrodome, but
what profile did Vince Coleman take? Because his results are arguably worse than Ventura's.
Do we even talk about Vince Coleman anymore?
It's funny they hired him and they like might be like the most phenomenally awful base stealing White Sox team I've seen.
And it's not just base stealing; it's like other base running activities as well. Like Melky getting.
They're not even that. Like, they're not even the worst team at base running in baseball. Their hitting is worse.
Oh well, compared to their own hitting, sure.
Everything's worse.
It's just funny that, like, after how bad the season is, like, they came out of the All-Star break, like, let's run on Sal Perez.
Well, one of those was Drew Butera.
Yeah, and he gunned them out like he was the same guy.
Like, he's a guy who's only in the majors because he's a good defensive catcher.
Let's see. I'm trying to see, like,
let's stop talking about Robin. I don't really care that much about Robin at this point.
He doesn't matter necessarily, other than I'm worried that he's going to slag more arms because he's a moron. But
the thing with the arms thing, though, I feel like at some point the arms decisions have to come down to Coop and Herm. Like, it's not like he's doing those without those guys' permissions, and those guys know as much as anyone about preventing arm injuries. So, like, in terms of managing arms, as much as I'm not willing to give this order the benefit of the doubt, I'm almost always willing to give them the benefit of the doubt for arms.
That's a good thing to keep in mind, but I just, you know, there's giving somebody input, and then there's who's getting the final decision. And it's unclear to me where those things come down. Because Ventura obviously makes decisions that I'm sure if Rick Hahn spoke to you candidly, he would tell you. It's like, yeah, that was a suboptimal decision, but I just, you know, that's his... That's if I start usurping those decisions, then I've already fired him, essentially. You know what I mean? Like, there's a separation of duties that each of these people has, and those are Robin's decisions at the end of the day. I mean, like, maybe if Cooper's saying, yeah, it's fine, he can go another inning, then you're right. Like, what the hell do I know? But I don't know if it's that clean. And I don't think it's that easy to just say, well, they're infallible when it comes to this area as collectively.
So
the Ventura thing is infuriating too, because like I said, it's something you can control, and if you can do better, you should. So that's it.
So with the Sox, I think we're in agreement that they're not making the World Series this year.
I think baseball perspectives has them at like 0.5% at making the World Series or winning the World Series at this point. I could look it up.
If we're that high?
What?
Is that high?
I think so. I mean, like, they could rack off like 10 straight victories or some crazy. They are at, oh, nope, they're at 0.1%.
I guess the logic would be the pitching's good, the offense is almost inconceivably bad.
I've been saying it can't be this bad for a whole season now. I mean, yeah, it's only 90 games. Took me too long to add up 42 and 48. I need to get back to school. But, yeah, I've been saying, like, oh, Melky can't be this bad. And actually, Melky looks better, which is a nice sign for the future. But, like, holy shit, their offense is so bad.
They're getting close to a couple more. If the next couple games break badly, they're only going to have two hitters with an OPS over 700. They're going to be Abreu and Soto.
And Saladino.
Oh, right. Well,
has Avi tanked that much? His OPS is going to go, is it below 700 now?
He's at 703. It actually dipped below 700 for a little bit, right back up. But that's why I said, if there's a couple more games, if Eaton, Garcia, and Abreu have a few bad games in a row, I mean, and Abreu dips below 800, which he's approaching rapidly.
I don't like just kind of like summing up the quality of an at bat with just like the pitch count. But Avi going 0-for-4 on and seeing 9 pitches Sunday was pretty funny.
So when you're at the stage of the year where you're saying, okay, and James, you talked about this a little bit in your morning 10 today, where you're saying, yes, Shuck has like been fine and he could outplay a starter for stretches of time, but like, you know what he is. He's a fourth outfielder. He's fine. And it isn't useful to you as a team that's trying to evaluate for the future to give a ton of burn to a fourth outfielder.
It'd be the same trap that we got with Gordon Beckham this year.
So my question then becomes, like, Abisail Garcia, like, is there?
Well, sure. We could transition to the idea of, like, who do we want to see play, and what's kind of like the goal for the rest of the year?
And like, what do they have? What do they have for the future?
Oh yeah, sorry, I totally biffed the agenda there.
It's fine. I mean,
wait, we have an agenda.
See, I mean, you're doing better than others.
we're gonna get bad comments for this again.
All right.
You should probably cut this part off of the podcast.
What was funny was after those comments, I was thinking about it when I was listening to podcasts, which are extremely successful, do all kinds of silly meandering, because that's what podcasts are.
We actually should fill in the dead spaces when we confuse with profanity. So then it seems more, like, artistic.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean.
Fuck! Like, see?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so I guess Avi is kind of written in stone as being this guy that you just, like, they're going to play and play and play until it becomes Dion Viciedo level awful and obvious. But
I mean, why not do that at this point in the season, though?
I mean, is there any question that he's going to, or would you even want him to not get the rest of 2015 at this point?
I guess if you're, like, super optimistic on Trace Thompson, which I'm not, so... But I mean, at least, and the argument would be, at least Trace Thompson can play defense. Which, I don't, you know, Abisail is 24. I'm wondering if his, you know, if experience is going to improve his defense at a faster rate than his athleticism erodes, and I don't know if it will.
Yeah, that seems unlikely.
Because he kind of plods already.
He isn't really all that important with Avi. I think he could be a fine defender, but if he's going to hit like this, he could be, unless he's Jason Hayward out there, you can't have a right fielder hit like this.
No.
Or even close to this bad.
No, but so that's what I mean. That would be the, if you're saying I'm, you know, why would I give up on him? There isn't really anybody else on hand other than Trace Thompson close to the majors anyway. And the narrative where Trace Thompson becomes a viable major leaguer is where his glove, like, he hits well enough to be a net positive given his glove, as opposed to, you know, because Trace Thompson, I think, in a corner is probably pretty good. But obviously,
can Trace Thompson pull the ball? Because they couldn't get Avigal Garcia to pull the ball. They couldn't get Dion Vecchietto to pull the ball. Do they know that they should pull the ball? Is that something the organization teaches? Is left field, do they know
it's fair, I think those are profile limitations on both those players.
Do they retire left field in honor of Paul Konerko?
Adam Eaton's learned how to pull the ball.
Yeah.
The fuck did his power come from?
I was talking to him
having like a really low BABIP, he'd be having a really good season right now.
I was talking to Paul Boyer yesterday about Eden's power surging. He's like, yeah, I saw one the other day, and it was a no doubter. Like, it wasn't. He's not doinking him over. He's like smoking upper deckers.
If he gets back his like 315 ish BABIP or whatever he had last year, like that's one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. Right?
He and Melky are definitely important moving forward. And like we were talking right before we started about the 3-year window idea. And the reason I'm talking about Avisail is because, you know, left field and center field are set, and I actually feel fine about them. I anticipate, like, you can go forward with Melky and Eden being meaningful parts of a good team.
You think that about Melky? Because I've been wondering this lately. Like, he's looked much better. He's looked like old Melky lately. And yeah. if this is what he is, and like we're willing to concede the beginning of the season is just some crazy bad Adam Dunn like fluke, I'm down with that. It's possible.
Was that really like a fluke? Adam Dunn never had like a peak season or anything close again.
But 2011, fluke's the wrong word, but like he was never going to be 2011 Adam Dunn again.
Yeah, but something real happened that was like probably the marker of his decline.
True.
I mean, no, but I get your point. Like, if I don't anticipate him doing, I expect that, you know, 2012 and 2014 are sort of, that's the best he's ever going to do, probably. But if he's even, like, 80% of that, like, that's fine. Like, you can win with that.
Just, like, kind of like a 110 weighted runs created guy.
Yeah, that's like
fine. I'm totally fine with him as a 120 runner rated guy. That he'd be the second best hitter on this team,
right? And given,
well, this team is not a model going forward.
No, but I'm. What do we make out of Adam LaRoche at this point, though? Is he done? Is he completely done?
He'd be a decent platoon bat, but they don't have any right handed hitters on the roster.
My anecdotal perception of LaRoche too is that like a lot of his. The last couple of years would have been, you know, his good years in Washington were often carried by, like, he'd be absolutely white hot for, like, a month, and it would kind of prop up the rest of the season. And I guess you could theorize, and that's totally, that's how I remember it. That may not be true. That may also be just my buddy who's a huge Nats fan who obsesses over every little detail coming to me. He's like, what about that? What about this? So my perception may be warped, but if he's, you know, if he goes nuts in August or something and then his year-long line looks fine, then
I sure as hell wouldn't mind getting out from under him if he could.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, it's...
The Cardinals need a first baseman with Adams out.
Yeah, and they could actually platoon him and not have him...
Don't the Mets need a first baseman if they're not ever going to use Conforto?
The Mets need...
We need to eat, like, 22 of the $25 million contract or something like that.
But they signed Kadire. What's going on there? The Kadire signing makes no sense.
Then they sign Kadire, and then they don't have to pay a draft pick. It's a long con.
Oh, but what was the slot value of that pick? It was like $2.5 million.
Well, they probably got the Players Association off their ass, and getting the Players Association off their ass means they could not have to pay any more money. Plus, they got to save that money on the draft pick. Now I sound like Hate Man.
Well, Hate Man's a good person to sound like.
Yeah, he just gets really mad about the Mets.
We get really mad about the White Sox, so.
Yeah. The Mets and the White Sox are like the same team, just except for like a hot April for the Mets. It's kind of funny.
They're like the same team, but like one organization has been crippled by like financial, you know, just malfeasance and incompetence. And one organization is trying its best.
Investing more and more money.
Dave Wilder's team more than people like to make. Like, Dave Wilder just completely boned his organization by, as did Jerry Reinsdorf, by refusing to pay on the draft. Like, that's pretty incompetent.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Like, it's like, wait, you're willing to pay Scott Linebrink $13 million? That's like two very solid years of draft pools and that one dude. Like, that's because that's
coming off an awful year. What were they even seeing him?
That was what was so crazy was the, like, when you talk about, oh, well, they're skimping on the draft, it's like, it's such a marginal amount of money in the grand scheme of things.
It's like such a philosophical disagreement. It's not,
it's like with the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks say, like, let $1.7 million of their slot money not, like, go to waste just out of nowhere, and they almost didn't sign Dansby Swanson. And they just traded Tukey for nothing.
And Swanson's sitting there. Like, if I'm in negotiations, it's like, dude, I know you've got the money. Like, I know what the slot value is. I know exactly how much money you're trying to just not give me. Like, you know, you can't play hardball. Like the White Sox, when they got to Rodon, like,
they
signed everybody else. And they were like, look, man, like, this is as high as we can go. You know, there's...
You can take this or you can go back to the draft. We can't give you any more money.
Yeah, it's like there's a, you know, we've left maybe a couple $100,000 that we're haggling over instead of like, dude, you got $2.5 million that you're just trying to pocket. Like, very different.
I'm just staring at how fucked this roster is or this lineup is against left-handed pitchers.
The Sox?
Yeah. I had kind of like joked at the beginning of the season thinking like there's no way he's still alive or they'll even do this, but like, if they wanted a platoon partner for LaRoche, Soto was probably the best, like, against lefties on the team. He's far and away the best on this roster right now. He's got a 141 weighted runs created. It's only, like, in 30 plate appearances because they're not really using him against them. But Avi and Abreu are basically league average. The next after that was Micah Johnson. But at this point, it's all solidly below average. Gordon Beckham, who was brought on to be kind of like a platoon option, is worse than LaRoche against lefties this year.
I want to say they've only played like 17 lefties all season, though.
It was 18 after Duffy.
They're hoarding all the lefties.
I'm sure they've lost all those games.
I was talking
Sanchez
to
a negative 21 rated ones created against lefties.
So above average for him?
Yeah. Apparently, like they've given Emilio Bonifacio more PAs against lefties than Soto. And he's a, you know, let's see, 344 OPS.
What is... There's no plan here. Soto, if I told you coming into the season that Flowers and Soto would perform as they had, wouldn't you assume that like everything was going great?
Yes,
it's been a very solid position for this team compared to every position at least. Like, catcher is their second highest position in terms of Fangraphs WAR to first base in relative to the league.
Well, funny, because going in, we're just like a catcher. It's like, yeah, we're just going to concede that that's just going to be a
whatever. Hey, man, I was the one who was moderately optimistic about Tyler Flowers, and I've basically been proven right. And well, I was about basically everything else, but I was right about that.
I was the one who was very excited about Soto on a minor league deal, not because I thought, like, it would, quote, like, you know, it's not like, oh, Soto's going to go back to his rookie of the year or whatever it is. But I was like, really? On a minor league deal? Like... That's, I don't know, given the state of the catcher position, that seemed, I was, would have thought he could have gotten a major league deal somewhere. And he probably should have, looking at it. But and that was something that was said. I think I saw people were criticizing the Hans like assembling of benches, and I'm just sitting here thinking, like, he picked up a good fourth outfielder and a great backup catcher on off like the scrap heap.
So, yeah, and then like the major league signings he made for that were terrible.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean $6 million. Oh yeah, there we go. Beckham and Bonifaci are making all the money that the White Sox saved on the draft in like 4 years. Like from 2005 to 2009, whatever was saved on the draft by like cheap, just going cheap on all that has just been like flushed on like Kappinger, Beckham, and Bonifacio in the last couple of years.
They're still paying Kappinger like $4 million, aren't they?
Some, yeah, four and a half, I think.
He never filed retirement papers from what I could find in the news. He just had no interest.
If you file retirement papers, don't you stop getting paid?
Yeah, he wouldn't be paid anymore. So
yeah, good point.
Like, because remember Gilmesh did that and saved like $30 million for the Royals or something.
Hero.
Yeah.
He's the Fangraphs hero.
Why?
So who do we want to see? Basically, Tyus Saladino play at third for the rest of the year, because that's what's looking like.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he can put in, like, prove himself as a halfway decent fifth infielder who could maybe, like, that's a guy who you could have on a major league roster. I'm all right with that.
Saladino, if your system is producing guys like Saladino, it obviates the need to spend $4 million on Bonifacio.
Exactly.
Because one of the skills that he has, he's a really good, like, base stealer. Like, at least he was in the minors.
He's been thrown out and picked off this past weekend.
He is a great... That was against Sal Perez, damn it.
One of the things that Theo Epstein and the Cubs have done better than anyone is finding, like, back-end-of-the-roster guys who turn into either serviceable regulars or, like, serviceable platoon players, guys like Chris Coughlin and stuff like that. That's the kind of guy
Valbuena
you want.
He took Valbuena, and then they flipped him to Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, and Dexter Fowler has actually been terrible, but I loved that trade when they made it.
Me too.
Shows how stupid I am.
Well, Ethan, I was thinking about this morning. You and I in the offseason were talking about how the White Sox would be very well served by acquiring Utley and Beltre.
I was really, really right about how bad the Red Sox and Mariners are. I was 100% right on those. I was wrong about almost everything else, but I was right about that.
The reason I'm not bringing it up because you know, I think that I still understand why I felt that way, and it obviously injuries are a risk with older players. But
I mean, I think both of us were qualifying those. Like, this is not what you want to do; it's what you have to do. I was in the pro Ramos Ramirez camp for a while.
I haven't checked on him in a while.
It's
hurt bad and ugly.
He's retiring soon. Let's put it that way.
But I mean.
Oh, he's still slugging .440.
So he'd be a big upgrade over what the Sox have.
Yeah. But to answer your question about Saladino, yeah, I mean, he's I think he's worth playing. I mean, like, who else should those at bats be going to? Matt Davidson?
Maybe Micah again eventually.
Yeah, do they get Micah back in the mix at some point here? Or do they keep letting Carlos Sanchez?
Well, I think the Sanchez thing is, like, I think they have to... how could they not realize he sucks? Like, they can't not realize he sucks. I feel like the Sanchez thing is kind of like, oh, we're not really trying to win this year. Let's make Micah Johnson a good infielder, maybe, and he could be a nice player for our team or something like that. I mean, that's how I'm trying to make the logic make sense, because otherwise... you can't be trying to win and have Carlos Sanchez starting every day at second base.
No, I mean, especially like if you had, you know, like 06
Rodon, who's going to play the best shortstop of anyone in baseball.
06 was an offense where you could get away with stuff like that, because they did it with Brian Anderson, where it was like, all right, we've just got a plus glove at a well, center field more so than second base, but like a premium defensive position. And we're just going to basically eat whatever his bat's going to be a zero. But because you had like Daitomi and Canerico killing it, you could hide it.
His bat wasn't supposed to be zero. It just happened that way.
No. I know that wasn't the plan, but like this isn't, it's not just that his bat is unplayably bad, but like, this offense can't carry that. This offense is dying. Like, it's been dead for...
How much worse in terms of wins is Clelius Rondon than Carlos Sanchez at this point? Because Clelius Rondon apparently can play the best shortstop out of anyone. Like, Andrelton Simmons shit at short, but...
Iglesias is up there, too, but, yeah.
I never want to ask how much worse can someone's offense be with the White Sox ever again.
Cluey Louis got a 450 OPS in high A.
Okay.
So
that much worse. That's worse.
Carlos is trending up. He's got a 608 OPS in July.
I mean, like, yeah, and like for reference, Carlos Sanchez at least was like hitting very well at AAA.
Yeah.
No, I want Cluey Louis to be a thing. It's just. Now's not the time.
I don't think it's going to be a time, man.
I was but not the, advocating for that. I was wondering how it could be.
It's a worthwhile rhetorical point because if you're basic, because like Sanchez is theoretically is in the spirit of that what you're saying,
right? That's to the nth degree because he's a much better defender, but a much worse offensive player.
Yeah.
Literally just like an out, like Shaq Thompson out on fence.
No, Shaq Thompson was even worse at a lower level.
Oh man,
I'd say what the stats he'd put up in the majors would be.
And this has prompted me to go check on Derek Hill because since rooting for the White Sox to succeed is never going to happen, at least rooting against teams that are failing that I don't like is Derek Hill actually has an OPS of 619 in low A for the Tigers.
Wasn't he the first-round pick last year?
He was, and I saw him play against Staten Island last summer, and I was like, I was confused as to how he's supposed to hit the ball out of the infield. But, I mean, he is 6'2", so...
It's pretty tall. Like,
there's a frame there, I guess.
Steven Moya!
Oh, I haven't checked on him. I'm going to guess he has, like, 30 home runs and, like, 180 strikeouts right now.
You know who was Steven Moya before Steven Moya? White Sox right fielder right now.
I mean, Steven Moya, doesn't Moya have, like, just hit more bombs than Abbasia, like, ever did? Because, yeah, he hit 35 home runs. He's like Joe Borchard.
Avi's supposed to hit bombs. He just doesn't know how for some reason, despite his frame.
Steven Moya has 101 strikeouts in AAA in 79 games.
Damn.
So the other guy I'd want to see this year, I think, would be Eric Johnson.
Yeah, what the hell? Why isn't he up yet?
I guess I can kind of be patient if the idea is Samardzija is being traded, but if they're kind of doing their normal, we're not going to be beholden to deadlines, we'll trade him in August if we want to, or we'll hold on to him and get the pick, or what have you.
Yeah, how much of White Sox dumb moves are just like spite? Like, no, that's the obvious thing to do. We're just not going to do that. You'll expect us to trade Samardzija. Well, we don't feel like it.
I assume it's more stubbornness and just like holding on, like we're not going to give up our leverage by like having to deal him at the deadline and crap like that.
I wonder how much of it is that Eric Johnson got close and then Danks threw like two shutouts out of three games.
What's the thing?
The weirdest bad seasons ever. Like every once in a while, he just throws a kick-ass start in there that's not actually that good, but like. It just, I don't know. It's been really entertaining to watch Danks this year.
He owns the Royals still, which is a fun little wrinkle.
Right, because if the Royals thing is frustrating strikeout pitchers by not striking out, if your plan is never to strike anyone out, you're one step ahead.
That's a really well-constructed team. As much as I didn't buy in going into the year... They're like built together as a team in a cohesive way that a lot of baseball teams haven't really figured out how to do. Like their pitching staff sucks, but they get people out because of that defense.
and that's what's fascinating to me is that everybody was like, oh, well, the Royals are this draft and develop team. Look at how great they are drafting and developing. They did a great job. The biggest, the best thing that that Dayton Moore actually did was the return that he got on Greinke.
Oh, that, and
that's the best thing he did. Because, like, Hosmer, even for, like, this year being his, like, oh, he's consolidating his gains or whatever, he just still slaps singles. He hasn't, he's, like, not very good.
And Moose since April hasn't been very good either.
No.
He's hitting, those like, are, 280 with very little power for a third base.
Those are top five draft picks. Like, Alex Gordon, he inherited. He did not acquire Alex Gordon, so.
Oh, it's Lo Kane being just the man. That yep. dude's so good. I wish that dude wasn't on the Royals because he'd be my favorite player in baseball.
He got Escobar too, who's like
I want him to be my favorite player anyway. And the fact that we're the dumb team that happens to be the one he hates the most, like, makes me hate this team more.
Yeah, I mean, Lo Kane's got more clout to me than the White Sox do. So.
Like, we're the team that wants to start crap with Lo Kane. Like. We're like the dumb villains that the superhero kills in the first half hour. And then, so the real villain shows up.
James, you're so much more talented than I am. That was such a good thing to say.
So
they, have
no,
they don't have any pitchers. They don't have any pitchers. Eric Johnson would be cool to see. I do think that managing his workload and Rodon's workload is probably playing a part in all this. I don't think it's the deciding factor, but I'm sure it's on their minds.
But if you don't trade Samardzija, better kick Danks out of the damn rotation so I can see some frickin' Eric Johnson.
Or you trade Quintana.
Millier?
You could. I mean, you don't have to. You don't have, like, but what I've been thinking recently is if you can sign Samardzija, and it depends, obviously, on how much you can sign Samardzija for, but if you can keep Samardzija at something reasonable, something like, I don't know, $485, and that might be too little. That's like Irvin Santana money. But like, if you can get him at the going rate for like a number three starter, I keep him because of the pitching depth and trade Quintana, who probably has more value on the trade market than anyone except for sale.
The thing with Quintana, if they're going to be as stubborn as they have been with Samardzija this season, you know, a guy who is going to hit free agency this season, like, that gives you an idea of how reluctant they're going to be to trade someone who's not a free agent for, like, 4 years.
But we're...
I get your logic. I get your logic. I just don't think that's something they would do.
I think in this case, you're not just trading him for prospects. You don't... If you trade for a guy for like Jose Quintana, you're supposed to be stubborn. You're supposed to be reluctant because that's a really good trade trip. You don't trade him for a bunch of top 50 prospects. You trade him for a top 20 prospect and a couple others. Or you trade him for a major league player. Like, that, and I mean, that makes sense. I don't know who you get for that, but you look at a trade, and obviously this trade is much laughed at now, but you look at a trade like the Jesus Montero for Michael Pineda trade. You look at a trade like the Andrew Kashner for Anthony Rizzo trade, that kind of trade. You trade from a position of strength, like pitching, because the Sox have a lot of pitching, and you look for a position of need literally everywhere else.
No, I totally get your logic. I think it's completely sound. I also think that Quintana is kind of like this. He's kind of maxed out right now. Like, this is his best he's going to, and I love it. Like, he's great. But, you know, he doesn't, for all that I think he's really good, I don't know that he has like a ton of margin for error either. Maybe I'm totally missing on analyzing Quintana, but I guess I wouldn't be the first person to underestimate Jose Quintana. So. But I totally get it. I do think that they've been working Samardzija in a way that it's like, once they realize they're not going to re-sign him, that they're like, all right, well, cool. You're going to throw 120 pitches every time you're out there, buddy.
That's kind of his value, though.
Yeah.
Stopping up stuff. And my concern with trading, I get trading Quintana and why it'd be good. I'm a little concerned that my contingency plan is signing up the 30-year-old with a falling strikeout rate who can't keep the ball on the ground for 5 years.
And this goes to the – James and I were talking about this on Twitter, but is starting pitching really where the White Sox should be spending their money?
If, like, you trade Quintana, I think you can spend money on pitching. Because you're going to need one more – you can't have just Sale and a bunch of rookies.
Yeah.
Like, no, I get that. I get that. But if – would you be better served trading Quintana depending on what your return is, or spending the $100 million that you would spend on – Because Quintana basically costs nothing. Like, would you be better served spending that $100 million that you'd spend on Samardzija on, like, Jason Hayward?
No, not Jason Hayward. The problem is look at who's available.
Right. It's got to be depressing, like, to watch his bat die in this organization.
But in general, like, the people who are available as free agents, position players who are available as free agents anymore, these days, they're all locked up, so they all suck. Like,
yep. You get third base and second base are a disaster for free
unless you get a guy like Robinson Cano who refuses to sign because he's going to get that much money, but then that guy tanks in a year and you're fucked. I mean, I don't think every $200 million contract is free agent is going to tank like Robinson Cano has this year, and I still have some confidence that he returns to his eventual or his former self, at least some of it, but I mean, just look at the free agent list. Unless you're going to go out and get, I don't know, Zobrist at age 35.
Like, well, that's part of why I was thinking. I mean, yes, second and third base, you can't really fix in free agency. I guess you could get Howie Kendrick, who's 32.
You can get Ian Desmond, who is hitting as bad as Alexei Ramirez.
Yeah, no, I'm not really into that. But the reason I suggested Hayward is because I just don't really see if like Avisail is going to get fixed. I just don't see this organization doing it. And granted, I appreciate that Hayward has had unreliable hitting mechanics and issues, and the Cardinals have, even Cardinals magic has only brought back his power so much. But I think that he's 25. He'll be 26. Like, if you sign him with like a 5-year, $115 million deal or whatever.
He's hitting way better than I thought he was, to be honest. I did not realize he had a near 800 OPS with elite defense.
And, like, that's the thing, is his skills at his age, like, his floor is so high.
That's what people said about BJ Upton, too. He had that skill set.
His strikeout rate was so much worse.
I agree, but I mean, I always am wary of, oh, his floor is high. I think that a lot of people underestimate how bad a floor can be sometimes.
Yeah, that can be. Never right, again. Be volatile. I just don't see his defense collapsing before he turns 30. Maybe that's misguided of me, but like. Okay, here's my point, though. We can quibble about Jason Hayward's possibilities, and there's every reason to be pessimistic about the White Sox ability to, like, get the most out of a position player. But my point is, and this is what James said to me, is this what the organization should be spending all their money on, is an arm? Should they be spending $100 million? They don't do big contracts like that, like, ever. If they're going to go do one, does it make sense to do it for a mid, like, an upper mid-rotation arm? Like, something that they seem able to produce internally? Or should they try to do it on, like, hey, here's a free agent in his mid-20s who's, like, right field is a position of need, even if we think Avisail could be cool. It's definitely a position of need now.
How much do you think Pfister will cost after this year?
Oh, he's scared. He scares the hell out of me.
That's why he'd be cheaper.
He wouldn't cost anything, I don't think. I'd love me a Justin Upton, personally.
That too. Right, no, same idea. Like, if you're going to do a big contract, like, you already have, you're dumping all your first-round picks into college arms, you've already got Quintana, Sale, Rodon in-house, you have Eric Johnson, looks like he could be a thing, like, Tyler Danish, some people like quite a bit, he's already got up to double-A, like, Carson Fulmer shouldn't take that long to get here.
He's going to be up by June next year.
I don't know if Eric Johnson's thing. That's why I'm eager to see it. He didn't thrill me in 2013.
I think that's fair. The reason why I say sign Samardzija is because it lets you trade Quintana. The reason why I say trade Quintana is because I think that that's the only way you get a legit young bat. And I really want a legit young bat because everyone else has cool legit young bats. The Sox don't have any of them, and I really want one.
Nice. I said this before we started, and I definitely see the logic, and it would, if you could actually put a specific player instead of me thinking about it in the abstract, I would probably feel could get warm to the idea more.
Brad
but I think that it makes you're not getting a top three all time shortstop for Jose Quintana.
No. You're not getting Corey Seager for Jose Quintana. I love Jose.
I mean, Corey Seager could be really good one day. I mean, he could be almost as good as Brad Miller one day.
Brad Miller would really help.
But I think that the value of hanging on to Quintana would be, I think the time to trade him would be like this time next year. I just think that there's the benefit of seeing if you can get off to a good start in 2016. And then if you don't, then you're no worse off trading him. But
yeah, I guess the value of trading him now is the extra, the extra year of control, the teams that need to contend now. But also you said if it was in the abstract, it would be a lot easier to think about. It's really hard to think of a young cost controlled player who is a reasonable return for Jose Quintana. Like we're not like,
like they're not going to do that.
I said, how much do the Sox need to add to get Xander Bogaerts? And it's a lot. Like those players, no one wants to trade players in at that level. Like we talk about it with the Sale level, no one is ever going to trade anyone like Chris Sale. But people don't trade guys at the Quintana level of trade value. Really, like those guys don't get moved very often.
And the benefit to your point in terms of trading the offseason is that if you want somebody who's in the majors already, you're not asking a team who's trying to compete this year to subtract from their major league roster. Unless you're saying like, hey, I'm a seller team with pitching and I need bats, and you're a seller team with bats and needs an arm. Like maybe that is out there, but yeah, like midseason, you're not really, it's hard to pull meaningful pieces off of teams' major league rosters.
I think you could maybe talk. There's a few teams that have those guys. I think you could probably start talking to the Red Sox. But yeah, it's a really hard conversation especially in season, because you're talking about for guys who are fair value for Quintana. Yeah, like you said, those are very valuable players for teams right now.
Yeah, if that's your plan, unless you really want to sell out and say like, okay, like. We just want to gut your farm, which is, you know, that's the other route. If a team's like, we really want Quintana, you say, give us your major leaguers. And like, well, we don't want to do that either. It's like, well, there's one other option.
Give us Corey Seager.
I love Corey Seager.
Yeah. God. Well, he's consensus number one now that everybody's graduated.
Yep. Him or JP. I love JP Crawford too.
Too bad we don't have Diane Vecchietto dangle to the Phillies for J.P. Crawford anymore.
and Ruben ain't in charge no more.
Yeah, that too. So we resigned ourselves to signing Gerardo Parra to play right field in the offseason and then watching his bat collapse.
Hasn't his bat already collapsed?
Well, you know that they're just going to keep playing Ivesale until he's Vecchietto too.
Yeah, and I laughed at that article on Fangraphs so much too. I still don't think the premise is very good, but the conclusion might be right.
It could happen. the other idea is that in terms of, you know, if it's hard to realistically and with a straight face talk about trade packages, because, you know, when it's like you've got the fan of a team talking about, well, we'll trade some margin for like Corey Seager, you know, whatever it is, like that happens so often and it's not a good look. But in terms of just looking at organizations that look like a fit in terms of what they might want, like who's going to want Samardzija. I mean, I would rather look at it in terms of like front offices that I consider vulnerable to be exploited. And one would have to think that, Arizona is one that we've talked about. I was wondering what you guys thought about maybe trading with the Angels because their front office imploded like mid-season. And I wonder if that would be, they might be.
They're apparently in the market for vulnerable. They're in the market for bats. And plus, like, their top five prospects are all pitchers. They have Heaney, who's, I think he's expired prospect eligibility, but then they got Newcomb, who's a really nice pitcher. And then like, their best position player prospect, according to BP, is their number six prospect, Kyle Kubzita. And because he's an Angels prospect, I don't, like, who's down on the list considering that system. I don't know who he is.
Yeah. No, I think I've heard the name, and I could probably try to scrape around my memory for what his deal is. I could see why they'd be looking for bats now, taking a look at their roster.
Their pitch is not bad, and, like, you can you can throw Hector Santiago out in that ballpark in front of that defense and make him an all-star.
Well, I think Jim Margulis said that Hector Santiago's strand rate would be the highest of all time. If it stayed, like, he's at like 90%.
Yeah, but if anyone is going to set that record, it's going to be Hector Santiago. Remember how he used to pitch with the Sox?
Yeah, that's true. Dude throws really hard and is like a really weird gimmick pitch.
Screwball.
I love watching Hector Santiago pitch.
I'm really glad he's doing well, by the way. I like him. So, I mean,
his career strand rate is 79.8, and yeah, 88.9 is higher than that, but 79.8 is really high.
Yeah,
in 460 innings. It's a career 3.25 ERA. That's really good.
I've just never seen this, like, on Baseball Reference's page where it says GM Jerry Dipoto resigned July 1st.
With a team that's now in first place, like, a couple days later.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a passing thought because I had in my head still the idea that they were looking for pitching, but I guess Shoemaker emerging as a viable option last year and Richards coming back from injury and Santiago makes it like less. I guess CJ Wilson's having one of his more palatable seasons.
They actually are pretty deep in their pitching between Richards, Wilson being fine, Santiago being good, Heaney and Weaver and Shoemaker. Like that's a pretty solid pitching staff.
Yeah, with freaking cannon fodder is Boston throwing against the Angels right now? Is that Jamie Wright?
Yeah, they start Jamie Wright now.
What? They do?
Or like he gets like this? Either they start him or he's pitching the third inning of games because every one of their pitchers just gets lit the fuck up every time they go out there. That was
He's got 52 in the third. He must have started. He just walked Trout to load the bases for Pujols.
Yes, he started.
He looks like he's given birth.
No, that's not Jamie Wright though.
Oh, that's Steven Wright,
the comedian. Not
the knuckleballer. Steven Wright. Who's Jamie Wright?
Jamie Wright was a lefty reliever for a little while.
Oh well, Steven Wright's the shitty knuckleballer.
Oh, he is throwing a knuckler, isn't he?
Yep, he is the.
I thought it was just a really flat curveball.
Can't believe you've never watched Steven Wright pitch.
Ethan, do you know who Steven Wright the comedian is?
I think I've I don't know if I ever watched him do.
Definitely YouTube it for like just YouTube it for 10 seconds and you'll have basically heard his whole
more
repertoire.
Highly revered by the Boston fan base than this guy.
I am pretty pleased that it does appear that more data is coming in, confirming my suspicion that the Ben Cherington front office is not all that great.
Yeah, they had a year where they won mostly on a Epstein team, like with Ellsbury and Pedroia just being amazing. And yeah, he made some really good signings that offseason, but like the why'd they trade John Lackey for Joe Kelly? What was the point?
And Alan Craig.
Yeah, negative value Alan Craig, isn't he in AAA now?
I think he went on.
Bogarts, who's their best position player. Bogarts and Betts are both Epstein dudes.
Yeah, like, I mean, he pulled kind of a White Sox 2015 offseason for that 2013 team where he signed a bunch of like mid-tier free agents.
Right.
Because he brought in like Victorino and Napoli and...
And everyone hit their 97th percentile expectation and they won the World Series.
Except Daniel Nava, who is definitely a true talent superstar, obviously.
I love Daniel Nava. I hate everything about the Red Sox for the most part, and I love Daniel Nava.
Did he perhaps rejuvenate a veteran team by giving them an awful manager and then freeing them from him?
That's some next-level mind games. I don't think somebody that brilliant goes into this year with this rotation.
I really like Farrell, though. I think he's a really good manager, pitching coach, dude. If they fired him because that team sucks, I'd take him in a heartbeat. Though I think you probably can't have Cooper and him on the same team.
It's funny because they had showed a shot of the dugout and you saw Farrell and then the pitching coach next to him with his head like slumped over the bench.
Didn't they fire? Nieves?
Yeah, that wasn't cool.
Yeah, he seems like a cool dude.
Like, what is the bullpen catcher supposed to do about like Justin Masterson's? Like repertoire. Like what's yeah,
well, he's the pitching coach.
What on earth is he supposed to do? Oh, sorry. Like he used to be the bullpen or whatever he is. Like, but like what?
He was the Sox bullpen catcher, and then he was the pitcher.
Oh, that's no, sorry, that sort of thing. But like, what on earth was he supposed to do about these arms? Like,
I don't know. They like everyone could see that coming from a mile away. Yeah, no one thought Porcello was going to be that bad, but and Buchholz has actually pitched really well this year, which I did not see coming.
He's but, also hurt, isn't he?
Yeah,
probably.
He has an elbow injury right now.
He's meeting Dr. Andrews
for a second opinion. But,
the Red Sox pitching is basically the White Sox hitting with a little bit of being a little bit better.
I think more hope.
Although this is demoralizing that it's that they gave up 11 runs earlier and that it was Eduardo Rodriguez who did it, because I know he was their like their silver lining this year. Anyway, Rodon's super cool, Sale super cool.
I think the Red Sox match up on a Quintana trade, by the way, or a Rodon trade. I think that would not be out of the question. If you want to get a legit young bat, like I've been saying, but I just really want a young bat.
I would take Bogarts.
I floated that earlier today, but that's such a hard trade to make line up. And Stephen Wright just hit another dude. This inning is going to shit. It's really funny.
I believe I have to get moving shortly. Is there anything else that we need to touch on?
I just want to say that I think if we trade with the Red Sox that Han is about to seal a deal, and Kenny knocks him out of the way and says, "We'll give up everything for Rosny Castillo."
Yeah, that sounds like something that would happen.
I'd take Hanley. I'd take that contract.
I don't know.
We have a first base DH slot that we can fill without LaRoche if we get rid of him. So. Sure.
I'd take Hanley on the same thing that got Rios here. I'd do that. I don't know if they're cutting bait like that, but I'd do that.
I never go in for the clubhouse thing, but Hanley's really supposed to be like a nightmare.
I thought his reputation has improved. It's just that he can't play defense at all in the outfield. Like, he's really bad in left field. Like, really funny bad.
If you listen to the Jonah Carey series of people ranting about their teams where his comedians come in, the Red Sox guy actually started he was like, "I miss Johnny Gomes because his defense was way better." Johnny Gomes.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone saw Hanley miss playing a ball earlier today. It was really... Did the Red Sox play two games today?
Yeah, they already lost 11-1 today.
And they're down 5-0 now.
It's awesome.
I mean, obviously they'd like to have the full-blown second coming of Manny Ramirez, but the second coming of his left-field defense is... It's like he's back.
I've seen people say he's, like, significantly worse than Manny in left field.
Yep, that was also mentioned on that podcast. He was like,
Jesus,
at least Manny, at least, he was like, at least Manny could throw. which sounds like our defenses are, like, abortive defenses of Diane Vizcaino. Like, oh, he can throw.
At least Hanley can hit.
Diane could only throw when he picked up the ball, so that was a bit of a...
Hanley Ramirez has 19 home runs and a negative .7 war. He has negative 19 defensive runs, and I don't think that's just UZR being stupid.
Yeah, getting to talk more about the details of UZR, like confirming some of the things that I'd heard about it. Don't use it. Just don't. It's not worth it.
Adam Eaton's 21 runs below average. What are you talking about?
Adam Eaton is as bad as Hanley Ramirez, basically.
Broken clocks and so on, but yeah, it's just like...
More like Haddam Ramitin. I need to go to bed.
This podcast has gone the same way any podcast I'm on is on.
I'm really excited to hear the reviews of this one.